It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
This is a question that's been included in every census since 1965, with the exception of 2010, when it was removed. We've contained this question that's provided data that's necessary for the Department of Justice to protect voters, and specifically to help us better comply with the Voting Rights Act, which is something that is important and a part of this process.
But there's a sense that ultimately this is going to disproportionately affect blue states. Do you acknowledge as much when you talk about voting rights?
I think that it is going to determine the individuals in our country and provide information that allows us to comply with our own laws and with our own procedures.
All right, that was Sarah Huckabee Sanders speaking just a few days ago. She's talking about a judge's order, a U.S. District Judge Richard Seaberg in San Francisco. Well, that's a surprise. Who is trying to block the administration's attempt to ask a simple question on the 2020 census, are you an American citizen? As though, the judge says, it threatens the very foundations of our democratic system. Really? Really? This is the madness in which we find ourselves. And, of course, the census, then, the numbers apply to the number of people living in a person's district. They don't have to be citizens. It gives, for instance, California more congressmen than they have citizens than they really should have because they represent non-citizens. It is nonsense, I have to say. But that's just one of two rulings. Another judge, meanwhile, a little bit later, decided that the president's attempts to rein in sanctuary cities and to punish them financially was unconstitutional. So that's another one. This one on the census will be heard by the Supreme Court. It's been appealed to the Supreme Court. They're going to be ruling on this April the 23rd. So that'll be interesting. I think it's the first time this court has ever weighed in on anything regarding immigration, at least something maybe this important. There are a lot of things happening today, and we know that there's a crisis on the border, right? You know, nobody has to tell us that. We can actually see it with our own eyes. It reminds me of the abortion debates in the 80s. I remember one woman coming in my studio in Chicago and telling me how some commercial came on television, maybe it was a political commercial, and she had a small child who inadvertently saw a baby interuterine. I don't know if it was an ultrasound or what. And the baby and her child said, "That's a baby." And her point was, this child could see that that's a baby, and yet we were being told it wasn't a baby, it was a blob of tissue. Well, we're being told that we don't have an emergency at the border, and yet you and I both know that we have a terrible emergency, that illegal immigrants are flowing over the southern border, bringing guns, bringing drugs, bringing criminal activity, preying on the American people. And the ones that are more innocent are taking jobs from American people and good medical care and space in public school classrooms. And on it goes. We absolutely have an emergency. The president declared an emergency. Now we have even the Republicans, many of them in the Senate, undermining him. And Mitch McConnell doing nothing about it. So I want to remind you that it would be really good. It would be imperative. You ask me often what you should do. You should call your senator, call your Republican senator, and tell them to support the president on his emergency declaration. Support him. Stop this nonsense. If you want to fill in the blanks a little bit, you can say, you know, when you had the chance, you did nothing. He's trying to do something. This is for the American people. It's not for President Trump. It's for our safety as a country. You need to support him on his emergency declaration. That would go a long way, I think. Let me tell you something else that's happening today in Congress. There's going to be a vote on what's called H.R. 1. We did a show on this a couple of weeks ago. Let me just say that this is the dream list of the left on voter rights. It is a nightmare for anyone who believes in a constitutional republic. And let me just give you an idea what it does. It undoes key Supreme Court cases that protect elections as fundamental to free speech. It would allow the Federal Election Commission to track and catalog more of what Americans are saying, register even very small political donations, and make public those who donate to different charitable and nonprofit organizations. The legislation will subject private citizens to intimidation and harassment for their private and political beliefs, far broader than what was done in the IRS targeting scandal in 2013. It also takes election authority away from the states. It will force states to implement mandatory voter registration. It will mandate states to allow all felons to vote. It will force states to extend periods of early voting. It mandates same-day voter registration. It bars states from making their own laws about voting by mail. It mandates free mailing of absentee ballots. It does so many things. It's really the dream list, really, of the left. And we know that the reason they want this is because they want more people voting that agree with them. And a lot of those people are coming over the border illegally. And when they go get their driver's license, they get signed up to vote. Not in every state, but in, I would say, most states now. We also know that the governor of Wisconsin has decided that illegal immigrants should be allowed to vote. I did not know that the governor of Minnesota, Tim Walz, has done the same thing. So we've got Tony Evers, the new governor of Wisconsin, and Tim Walz, the new governor of Minnesota, both on the same page about letting illegal immigrants vote. You see where this is headed. H.R. 1 is being voted on in the House of Representatives. It won't pass. But what they plan to do, this is the long game. It's the long march through the institutions. As I've told you, the left has long-ranging plans. They know that this will not pass today in the House, but they will pull it apart, put it in pieces, and try to pass it one by one. And, you know, persuade the public and intimidate Republicans who, except for the Freedom Caucus, will cave. And Mitch McConnell, we know, will not stand strong because he never does. So that's where we're going on this, and that's H.R. 1. It'll be voted on today. I have lots of email from you from this week that I didn't get to, so I want to kind of jump into that. I always enjoy hearing from you. I always read your email, and I can't comment on all of it. I wish that I could, but I know that you understand. This is from Laban. He says, thanks, Sandy, for not just preaching to the choir and then taking a poll of the choir with your phone calls. Your interaction with callers shows you appeal to and listen to callers of all perspectives. Laban, it's funny that you should say that because when I read that, I thought, well, you know, I did a three-hour drive time radio in Chicago for a number of years, and we had good old knockdown, drag-out fights because I had lots of opposition, and much of my open phone line conversations were with people who opposed me. I always put them head of the line. Well, now that I'm at so then it also reminded me of someone who weighs in on Facebook a lot. He listens all the time, so maybe he's listening today. His name is James. You'll see his name on Facebook. James has been complaining for, I think, since I started at AFR, that I never take phone calls of people who oppose me and that I don't invite guests on who to argue with me, which is what I did when I was in Chicago. He's right about that. And I've said this to him, but I will say it again. I really enjoy a good argument. I did that on television for years. I debated people who had opposing viewpoints and am happy to do that because I think if you really believe in something and you really know why you believe it, you're willing to really argue the details. A good faith arguments I enjoy. But at AFA, yes, I have a more monogamous audience. More people agree with me on this network, and that's a fact. So we don't often get people that oppose, but when we do, I do put them top of the show. So James, rest assured, I am not hiding from opposite viewpoints. I just, I don't have a lot of them, but I do enjoy it very much. James says, our court system debates both sides, first the prosecution, then the defense, and that's what he wants me to do. But James, I would say if there was ever a great example of, you know, giving your own truth, if there is such a thing. This is my truth. It's in the courtroom. It's one side telling their truth, the other side telling their truth, which means omitting things, spinning things. I'm not into doing that. I am into telling you my opinions. Absolutely, I'm not a news person. I'm an opinion maker, but I form my opinions based on facts. even though you may not agree with me. So I'm glad you're listening, though. All right, be right back with Tom Fitton and Victoria Tensing on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
All right, Sandy Rios with you here live at SeaPac at National Harbor. And it's always nice to see friends. And one of my friends that I'm most proud of, honestly, because I know him, I know the integrity that he has. You know his name, you see him on television debating all the issues, but he has made a powerhouse out of Judicial Watch, and he is the president of Judicial Watch, Tom Fitton. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Sandy. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so you were on stage this morning, and what were you, what was the topic this morning?
Well, I was on with the former chairman of the Intelligence Committee, Devin Nunes. We're talking about Russia, you know, the other national emergency, which is, you know, Russia kind of is an easy way of talking about what, in my view, is a coup effort to overthrow the president. You know, it was targeting him during the campaign. They didn't get him then.
You are saying that you and Congressman Nunes were talking about Russia having a coup, I just want to make this clear, against President Trump.
No, I'm talking about individuals in the United States using the false allegations of Russia collusion as a pretext to try to remove the president unlawfully and target him and abuse him. You know, I made the point on the stage, you know, the president's a crime victim. It's rare you have a crime victim in the Oval Office, but the way our government's treated him and the abuses of power, you know, anyone else, if he weren't president, he'd have a lot of lawsuits he could be pursuing.
You know, when I think back on Watergate, Tom, the media made so much of this. I'm not saying it was right, but the burglary was one time. It was a burglary of two people who went into the DNC headquarters. And at the time, I don't think people even know this, they were afraid that the Democratic National Committee was dealing with communists in Cuba. And they had reason to believe that. And that's why they went in. And I'm sure they had other motives, too. And I'm not saying that they should have done that. But I'm just saying that was it. That's what happened.
Well, and the irony is, if you assuming the left's narrative on Watergate is what it is, it shows you how dishonest they are, because they use those very same techniques to target President Trump, taking up his phone records illicitly, using this FISA secret court process to spy on his team and basically target him. You know, that's Watergate, except President Trump was the target of these Watergate-like activities and abuses.
It's absolutely right, and so similar. And the media's role in that, that was shocking.
Right, and the media pretends that they're the great watcher.
Yeah, like and Woodward and Bernstein were the heroes of that little episode, when in truth, they were carrying water for a media. Now people understand that the media is corrupt more than they did. In 1973, they never suspected that Walter Cronkite was not the most trusted name in news. He wasn't. And so this is a replay of that. All right, so Tom, what do we not yet know? Do we know yet if Rosenstein really did offer to wear a wire and want to invoke the 22nd Amendment? Do we know that for sure?
Well, there's a dispute about that. Judicial Watch just filed a federal lawsuit to try to get answers about what went on there. Incredibly, Congress has held no hearings about this discussion of the 25th Amendment, the threat to wear the wire. I mean, to be clear, the 25th Amendment is for a president who, in theory, is incapacitated, either mentally or physically. It's not to remove someone because you disagree with their personnel decisions. That's a coup. And that's what was going on at the Justice Department, DOJ, and FBI, and those discussions at least. And there's been no investigation of it. And I'm not aware of any Department of Justice investigation. Certainly Congress hasn't held one hearing on it. They're holding abusive hearings, violating the president's rights with the Cohen disgrace. But, you know, Rod Rosenstein coming in to have to talk about what he was talking about. You know, and maybe it was all innocent, but we don't know. But what we do know is that on the surface it had all the elements and indicia of a classic coup operation. You know, Sandy, if it was generals and colonels talking about removing the president and figuring out how to do it, would there be any doubt of how we think about it? But because it's bureaucrats at the DOJ and FBI, the media wants to pretend it's normal.
Well, and the bureaucrats want to cover for themselves, even Republicans, and especially Republicans. It's really been an amazing story to watch, and you guys have had the inside track on that. I want to ask you, you know, as we look at this, no one, well, Andrew McCabe was fired. Who else? Some people were removed from justice. Any other? Anybody else pay a price for this besides Paul Manafort and General Flynn and now Roger Stone? Anybody else pay a price?
No, the deep state actors have largely skated. You know, in theory, Andrew McCabe is under investigation on an unrelated matter, which is lying allegedly about his authorization of leaks to the media and public statements to the media. I don't know if he did anything wrong. I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. He says he didn't lie. He had authorization from Comey. Comey says I didn't give him authorization. Who do you believe? That's a hard case for me. I don't know if I'd credit either witness if I were sitting on a jury.
Michael Horowitz, the Inspector General, is there another shoe to drop with him? Or is it just over?
You know, I think these IG reports are useful in the sense they provide, they expose certain facts, but they never really go as far as necessary in terms of getting to the bottom of it. I said they're both exposés and cover-ups at the same time.
Yes.
For instance, in his analysis of the Clinton cover-up, he said, well, you know, if the Justice Department had a legal reason for providing Hillary Clinton with a get-out-of-jail-free card, I didn't question it, when obviously he should have questioned it.
Yeah. Well, and also that first report was heavily edited. Remember that?
Yeah, it was.
The people that were called out, at least as far as we know, that's my way of saying it, in the report, had the ability to redact and take things out. So I'm not sure has Judicial Watch had access to the unredacted version of that?
I'm not sure what that is, but generally speaking, we get documents both on the Clinton email issue, Russiagate, that are heavily redacted.
Yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily prevent us from getting key information for the American people, but for every bad thing you hear about as a result of a Judicial Watch disclosure, there's probably other bad things you don't know about because of the government's improper secrecy.
I would be interested to know what you thought about Michael Cohen's testimony this week, Tom.
It was really disgraceful. And, you know, look, Cohen is who he is. He's a criminal. He has no respect for the rule of law and basic ethics as a lawyer. So we know about that, right? So why on earth would Congress enable and endorse and co-conspire with Mr. Cohen to violate President Trump's rights? He was giving away documents to Congress he had no right to under law.
Taping his clients.
In violation of the president's privileges. And Congress should, you know, any more than Congress had a right to rifle through the president's office and take documents and steal them, did they have a right to get them through Cohen? Really a decrepit example of a congressional abuse of power. And it shows you, and to me, it's just one more link of the chain of abuses going back to the campaign of abuse of power by those opposed to President Trump.
So now Mueller, of course, we kept hearing that it was going to be over last week, I think it was. It was going to be over and the report was going to be, you know, finished. And here we are with this week, and we heard nothing about that. You speculate, I think, that Mueller is not going to end this. I don't know why he would. He's making a lot of money. These guys on his staff, I mean, this is a good job where you really don't have anything left to investigate, but you stay on the payroll. Honestly.
Well, you know, if you're a government bureaucrat, there's nothing as important to investigate from their perspective, especially if you're trying to take out the President of the United States. You know, you go back to your regular job at the Justice Department pursuing, you know, the sorts of criminals the federal government usually pursues. No, they don't want to do that. They want to keep on doing what they're doing now. I mean, that's, again, I'm speculating, but it's based on a record of that Mueller has had nothing on Russia collusion for well over a year now. It's pretty clear for well over a year. Anyone who has been following this in terms of investigations, and certainly those of us on the public, they know there's nothing to the Russia collusion theory. Yet Mueller's been running around like a zombie investigator, the special counsel. So that what makes me speculate that it ain't going to end anytime soon.
Yes, and I'm so concerned, and I've said this on the William Barr in his confirmation hearing, kept talking about Bob, what a good friend he was to Bob. Bob came to both of his daughter's weddings, and so it's just disturbing. And then we saw William Barr introduce his family. They almost all, like, what, four or five of them in a row sitting there, all work for government, which is, you know, code for they are part of the inside group here. They're not going to shake the trees, because if they shake the trees, it will have repercussions for family members. So it's really pretty distressing, Tom. All right.
That's why you need independent groups like Judicial Watch. That's why you need Congress to provide oversight. And the hero of the story still could be President Trump.
Yeah.
Because he's still the president, despite their efforts to overthrow him. And he can order all of this released, and he can shut down the Mueller investigation as well.
You know, Tom, I think that is one of the most stunning things about this to me, is that after everything has been aimed at President, everything, the leadership of the Republican Party, the Democrats, the media, access, they've already had access to his tax records. Are you kidding me?
Right.
They've got access to everything. They've investigated his children, his business dealings. They found that TMZ, you know, video or what undercover video. If that's all they have on him, to me, given his past and who he is, he's a billionaire, good-looking guy. If this is all they've got, honestly, it isn't very much. I don't know if you would agree with that.
Well, what's also remarkable is how he's had to he's had a reasonably successful presidency in terms of reform and regulatory changes. You know, and it's never as much as a lunatic conservative like me was. But compared to your typical Republican presidency, it's been a dramatic change for the better in terms of cutting back the size of government, pushing back against these liberal nostrums at the bureaucracy and certainly in the cultural issues, talking sensibly about immigration. You know, I want him to do more, but he's talking about it in a truthful way that no other president in recent history has had done it.
It's and abortion just, and the issue of life, nobody, including Reagan, ever.
A hero for the
like
babies, a hero for the babies, and heartfelt, it's pretty clear.
Yeah.
This is despite those biting at his heels and breaking the wall to try to bring him down, he's still able to manage him. You know, and he's attacked for being a hothead. I tell you, he's kept his cool considering all the attacks against him.
I totally agree. I think that he's actually, like him or love him, he's kind of a wonder of the world, really. I don't know how one man could have withstood what he's withstood. Let's talk about Mrs. Clinton. I know that Judicial Watch has done more on that issue than almost anyone. What do we not know yet, Tom? Is there any stone left unturned in the issue of her, you know, her email, her...
Well, we still don't have all of her emails. The FBI has only been able to recover 5,000 of the 33,000 that she deleted. So we don't know
that she did with what acid and what did they do with him?
Bleach bit or whatever it's called.
Yeah,
right. So
yeah.
Those other copies of emails that were destroyed in various ways. Well, I can tell you, federal court still has questions, and that's why we've been granted discovery into the Clinton email issue and the Benghazi issue. The judge says, "Well, was Benghazi one of the reasons we don't know about the Clinton emails?" That issue's front and center in discovery we're taking. We have witnesses coming in. They're going to be deposed under oath. Hillary Clinton's lawyer is going to be deposed under oath. Susan Rice is going to have to answer written questions under oath. Ben Rhodes, who came up with the fake talking points on Benghazi, is going to have to answer questions under oath written. And the judge wants to know, why did she set up the system? Was it designed to avoid the FOIA? Was the court hoodwinked? Because you just think of all these questions we were having about Benghazi, and no one was telling us about the Clinton emails. We forced it out of them. And, you know, were they messing with the court? And he wants to know, well, was the search adequate? Are there other emails? Where can we find them? So all these questions are going to be put to these witnesses and to the government over the next few months, not by Congress, not by the Justice Department or State Department, but by Judicial Watch. And it's over the objections of this Justice Department, State Department, that we're able to get any of this done.
Tom, I think people, you know, the news moves so fast, and there's such a glut of it.
Right.
Do I need to tell you that? So I think people wonder, what difference, like Mrs. In the words of Hillary Clinton, what difference does it make? I mean, after all these years, and it seems like years, it seems like eons since that story broke about her email. What difference does it make now? Why do you guys keep pursuing that?
Because I think the American people are tired of the Washington approach that, you know, you run for office, you lose. Any corruption associated with the loser goes down the memory hole. And that if you're powerful and you're a protected entity in Washington, D.C., the rule of law you don't have to worry about. And that's the difference. The difference is whether we're going to have a republic based on the rule of law or a republic based on the whims of men. And if we value our republic, we're going to want full accountability. You know, and it does make a difference. And, you know, and to the end, and I know people are frustrated that Hillary Clinton hasn't been prosecuted, and I am too, but, you know, we know the way Washington's been working. But on the other hand, there's been rough justice. She's not president. And she one of the reasons she's not president, and I would think the biggest reason, is because of the corruption that we caught her in as a result of Judicial Watch's activities. Yes. We didn't do it to stop her presidency, but the end result was she's not president.
Yeah. No, that's very
true. And
that's
rough justice. You know, there is it's not perfect accountability, but that's better than nothing.
On the flip side, I'm heartsick at what's happened to General Flynn. I'm heartsick, even though Paul Manafort may not be the cleanest character in the world. Surely he doesn't deserve. I've heard accounts. I heard a CNN anchor talk about seeing him in court and how he looks like he's just close to death, that he's on a cane. He's struggling. He's aged. He's not the man that people see in pictures. Surely he didn't deserve that kind of solitary confinement and that kind of treatment. And then I think of Roger Stone, who they'd love to do the same thing with.
Right.
You know, so what? Well, how about the justice for them, Tom?
Well, I agree with you, and this is why I think the president should shut down the Mueller investigation. I mean, if he were just a target, I could see fair political calculations, just let the virus run its course. But the virus is taking out innocents. Besides the president. Yes. The president, as we talked about, he can manage. You know, he's a big boy. He can manage this, and it's not pleasant for him, and it's unfair and outrageous. But he's still the president, and he's got work to do, and he's not going to be picking a fight with Mueller over this issue personally he has. But there are other people being victimized by Mueller, and this is why I would encourage him to shut it down. And or in the, you know, now there's a new attorney general. This is the sort of thing that should be brought to his attention in a more public way. And unfortunately, there's been a massive failure of leadership out of Congress, and even from our friends, in this refusal to take on this abuse by the Mueller operation. We talk about the FISA, that's important. But the current crisis is the Mueller operation that has benefited from all that, that kind of was formed from all of that. Why aren't we talking about the Mueller operation and providing oversight and having Congress come in and say, you know what, we're going to oppose, you know, for instance, Congress is going to come in and oppose the president deploying troops to the border and misusing resources there, so they say. I wish there'd be similar interest in saying no to the Justice Department misusing resources to harass these individuals we're talking about.
I do too. And just to be clear, I think Bob Mueller's not a hero. He is a villain in this. He reminds me of that prosecutor in Les Miserables, the prosecutor that pursued Jean Valjean, you know, all those years. That's what he reminds me of. And so to have labeled him as a man of integrity and honor over and over again, I guess that's why they don't call him out, because they claimed that and they would look like fools if they were wrong. So they have to keep their own narrative.
And, you know, we're pushing against the FBI is one of the great PR operations of all modern history. And, you know, we're not allowed to say anything negative about the FBI. And if we mention directors like Mueller, we're supposed to fall down, on our foreheads. And we're not going to do that. Mueller is a government bureaucrat who needs to be held accountable. And he's basically right now a contract lawyer for the attorney general, who is just being allowed to ride roughshod over the president and other people who really don't deserve the scrutiny they're getting.
And that is exactly why Judicial Watch is so important. And Tom, under your leadership, I really so grateful for you. I pray for you.
Thank you.
I do pray for you and your family, because you are in a very important position. I know the president respects you. The liberals respect you, even though they hate you. And you're in a position to make a tremendous difference. And so thank God for you. Judicial Watch, you do live streaming all the time, right?
Oh, yeah. We're on the internet, YouTube, Facebook, all over the place.
JudicialWatch.org.
JudicialWatch.org. And, you know, use your search. I'm not going to tell you to Google it anymore.
don't go there. What is the other one? Duck, whatever. Duck, go or something.
You go on the internet and find Judicial Watch, and you'll find the documents we're talking about and further discussions like the one we're having today.
Tom, great to talk to you. Tom Fitton,
hey,
Judicial Watch. I'll be right back. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
All right, Sandy Rios coming to you again live at CPAC. And as I said, one of my very special privileges is to see people that I consider friends, who we've gotten to know each other through the radio through the years, and who are really making a difference and have for so many years in this country. And one is sitting across from me, Victoria Tensing. Really, I got to know her when I was in Chicago on radio. And it was during the Clinton years, Victoria.
Oh, boy.
And we talked a lot about, yeah, the Clinton. Are we still in the Clinton years? This is Clinton years iteration 10 or whatever. But all the scandals. And you and I used to talk often about that. Let me just say that Victoria was with the Justice Department for a number of years, and she was the chief legal counsel for Barry Goldwater. There are so many things other to say, but also she's married to this guy that people have heard of named Joe DeGeneva. And you guys are law partners, right?
We are, and we also practice with our son, Brady.
Oh, really? See, yes. I've never met Brady. We got to fix that. So the next generation of DeGenevas?
No. Tensing. Brady Tensing.
Okay, so, all right. Yeah. Okay,
very good. He's actually vice chair of the Republican Party in Vermont and was chairman
really?
For Trump.
No kidding. See, I didn't know this.
Uh-huh.
Well, Victoria, it's fun to see you. And let me just ask you, where do I know where to start? I want to ask you, let me start with this. You were very involved with many of the victims of Benghazi, whose names we don't know.
No, one. I had one client, the chief whistleblower, Greg Hicks.
All right.
He was the DCM.
And he ended up testifying.
He did.
Yes.
All day.
Yeah. Just give us a little vignette on that, because people don't, because of the news, the massive amounts of it, people won't remember who he is. How did that come to you, and what was his story?
He was the number two person in the embassy. It's called the DCM, the Deputy Chief of Mission, and he was the last person to talk to the ambassador alive. Chris said, "Greg, we're under attack," and that was it. And Greg tells his story, and he cracks. He's doing what I'm doing, because it's such a sad state. It didn't have to happen, because the State Department and Trey Gowdy did such a lousy job with that committee. They never got out how the security dwindled down almost to nothing after Chris Stevens took over as ambassador. When he went there, and they never asked Hillary Clinton this question in the hearings, when Chris went there as ambassador, there were 38 security personnel. When he went to Benghazi just a few months later, there were 9. And I tried to get members of that committee to say, "Madam Secretary, do you know?" And none of them would do it, because Republicans don't know how to fight.
That's an innocent explanation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay. That's a very kind one.
Let me just do a really wrap up, because this is a really talking about Republicans fighting. They brought the State Department, the Hillary State Department, brought Greg Hicks back from being DCM and put him in a broom closet after he complained internally about Susan Rice lying about the cause of the attack. They put him in a broom closet, and anytime anybody wanted to hire him to go with them to the embassy, they'd have to come back a few days later and say, "Oh, I'm sorry, they won't let me." What they were doing is trying to force Greg out, so he had to retire. And he found that he didn't want to retire. And we found a think tank that would take him. But the State Department had to approve it, and they were not signing the papers. And Lindsey Graham, God love him, called up Burns, the number two person in the State Department, and said, "If you don't sign those papers for Greg Hicks, I'm never doing another blanking thing for you again." And a miracle occurred. Those papers got signed. But this is, I don't want to make the story too long, but it really shows, if the Republicans knew how to fight, and God bless Lindsey again at Brett's hearing, you know, they could get, they wouldn't be so stampeded by the Democrats, but they are.
You know, you may not want to comment on this, but I will, if you don't. You mentioned that Trey Gowdy's hearing on Benghazi was a disaster, and I totally agree with you. And that the irony is, of course, Trey Gowdy's such a champion to people because he presents so well on television. Mm-hmm. But the truth of it is, the real people involved in Benghazi were never even called to testify. You know, there was a counter, as you know, there was a counter organization sort of built up by people that were, some people whose names we've never heard, that were in the hospital. Andy McCarthy was part of that. A lot of our mutual friends were really working away, getting the truth out about Benghazi, and they couldn't even get a return phone call from Trey Gowdy's committee. I don't understand that. Do you have any insight as to why that might be?
I don't know. It was like Trey was in la-la land. I offered him the services of somebody who would have been very good to be a spokesperson for the committee, and he had a low-level staffer call the person. I mean, I was offering this person free to really come in and help get the message out, and he didn't He didn't seem to want it.
Yeah.
So, it was a disgrace.
Yeah, it was a disgrace. It remains a disgrace. And so, Victoria, moving now to the latest scandals. This week, of course, Michael Cohen testified. And I would really, I mean, there's a lot we could say about it, but I want to know what you thought. You probably watched a great deal of that back and forth with Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows and others on that committee. But what did you think about Michael Cohen's testimony?
I don't think he can open his mouth without lying. I mean, I think it's a personality trait of some people. Just as an overall thing, Sandy, how can Trump be saying, hey, I'm just doing this for a PR stunt, I'm not really going to win, but then do anything, quote Michael Cohen, do anything, quote unquote, to win? I mean, that's inconsistent. But let me tell the listeners some legal things, because people don't understand, you know, what's important. Cohen went up to the Hill and said that he was negotiating on the Russian deal until March. And then he comes back and says, oh, I lied, it was really until June. It doesn't matter one legal whit if it was March, June, or up until the election day. There was nothing illegal about negotiating for a deal in Russia.
For business interests.
Yeah, business interests. Theoretically, he could have done it up until inaugural day, but that would have been kind of dumb after you win. But legally, until he was president, he was a businessman. He was not president of the United States. So why did Michael Cohen say, I did it to protect the president? From what, Michael?
Right.
From what? And here's another thing. Cohen pled guilty in the Southern District of New York to some major crimes, like getting out of paying over $1 million worth of taxes on over $4 million worth of income, making false statements on bank applications, and the stupid lie that I don't even know why he did it. But here's the crime he did not commit. It was not criminal conduct. Paying off Stormy Daniels. It's perfectly legal to settle potential lawsuits, threatened lawsuits, during a campaign. It is absolutely...
It's not a campaign donation, as they keep saying.
No.
They keep saying it was a campaign donation.
No. But let me tell you, these are people, they drive me crazy, and they're supposed to know the law. It was Donald Trump paid it. It came out of his money. The candidate can give as much money to his own campaign as possible, so it can't even be an issue. This is, the Democrats conflate all this stuff, and the Republicans are so stupid, except for Mark Meadows and Jim Jordan, who are my heroes.
They're mine too. Yeah.
the Democrats, as I said to somebody, you remember war on women, war on women, war on women, and after that went on, because they all read the same sheet music. The woman who does my hair says, Mitt Romney wants to take away my birth control. I mean, because that's what happens out there in the ether. And I beg these Republicans, can you just get a line of the week, you know, and maybe everyone just repeat it? Could you do that?
Think of your own short phrase that people can remember and repeat. Yeah. So instead of Bush lied, people died. Halliburton, whatever. What are those buzzwords? Were? I mean, they're really good at that.
War on women.
It's marketing. It's social psychology, and that's what
Russia collusion.
Russian collusion.
Russia collusion.
Yeah, I know.
No one even knows what that is.
I know. So, do you think from Cohen's testimony that it will really damage the president? Do you think it was? I know it was damaging.
It's not legally damaging. There's nothing. Nothing there. You know, and politically, I think those of us who have supported him go, okay, what's next?
Yeah,
I mean, did you see these lies?
Well, you know, the thing that really, one of the things that stunned me was his closing statement, which was
disgusting.
A political statement. It had nothing to do with Michael Cohen's situation or him being the president's attorney. He just made a political, I would have asked him, who wrote your speech?
Was it Lanny Davis? Yes.
Yes, but who's sitting right behind him? It had to be, because it was so blatantly a political statement.
Ridiculous, really. And Lanny Davis is, of course, a Clintonista from way back.
Yes.
He was out there representing Hillary Clinton, and Michael Cohen was stupid enough to take his services.
Victoria, what do you think is... I just talked at great length with Tom Fitton a few minutes ago. Hardly anyone has been punished for all of the shenanigans that have taken place from Bob Mueller's investigation. People have been punished, like Lieutenant General Flynn has been punished. Paul Manafort is, from all accounts, even a CNN anchor said recently they saw him in court, and he looked like he was near death. He's on a cane. And so Roger Stone was, you know, subjected to this horrendous early morning raid by, what, 16 FBI agents with, like, looking at a
SWAT
team.
I did terrorism cases. We didn't send that many to arrest a terrorist. I did drug cases in Detroit. We didn't send 4 or 5 agents.
How can that still be happening? What is the story with Christopher Wray? I would really like to know what you, what can you say about that?
I can tell you, Christopher Wray is an empty suit. When he was Assistant Attorney General under Bush, and Bush had terrible taste in lawyers. I think the line always was that I don't think he liked lawyers, so he chose bad ones. Think of the Attorney General, Gonzalez, who was
Gonzalez.
Horrible.
Yes.
Horrible.
And before
Harriet
that,
Myers.
Harriet Myers.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
No, you know, it was like, oh, geez, who can support her for the Supreme Court? That got over quickly. So Chris Wray was Assistant Attorney General in the Justice Department. I know it well because I was Deputy Assistant AG in the same place. And we took to him the tale of corruption of a Bush, a Republican-appointed U.S. attorney in Delaware. And we said how he was threatening people to expose their sex lives. He was falsely accusing a former Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court clerk of conflicts just to get rid of him. And he was getting us out of the case by subpoenaing us, which then we could no longer represent the client. And then he was trying to put us in jail when we threw... He asked the judge to put us in jail when we refused to testify. So this is just corruption up the gazach. And Chris Wray did nothing. And I don't care. Republican administration, and it's a Republican person gone bad. It's the Justice Department, for God's sake. You're supposed to correct it.
Do you have any confidence in William Barr?
Of course.
Okay, I want to hear this.
I love Bill Barr.
I want to hear this, please. We need some encouragement infused right into the vein there. So you're on, Victoria. Encourage us.
Well, we recommended Bill to the president. He was our candidate. We didn't talk about it. Before the process was over, we would just say, yeah, we've made our views known. Bill Barr loves the law. Look, he took time to write a how-many-page memo about why should not be any investigation of the president for firing Comey. I mean, you have to love the law.
Yeah, yeah.
To do that.
Yeah, so you're not concerned about his personal relationship with Bill
Bob Mueller. He loves the law more than he loves Bob Mueller. Put it this way.
Yeah. Well, that's really encouraging because, I've heard it. I was concerned when he talked about his good friend Bob Mueller in the hearing so often. And then I was also concerned. And this will, you may be offended by this, Victoria, but when I see someone introducing their family members and they're all connected in government, that makes me nervous.
No,
because
that's a good thing.
Well, it can be.
Yes.
But it can also be a muting factor where you're not willing to, stick your head up too high because everybody's connected in government. So that was a concern to me. So I'm glad to hear you say that. That gives me encouragement. What could he do to sort this thing out? What could he do, William Barr?
Well, I think the best thing he could do is appoint a special counsel, even though I hate special counsels. Get the political thing out of his office, because whatever he does, if he touches this whole thing about the FISA application and all the dossier and all that, whatever he does, it's going to be criticized.
Yep.
Get somebody in who's a neutral kind of party and have them look at it and find out what really went on at the FBI and the Justice Department. So I think he needs to do it in a separate entity. I think also he needs to get some kind of oversight of the FISA process, because what happened to Carter Page should never happen. I mean, it should never happen to an American citizen, and yet the Democrats and the media, again, the Republicans are not fighting hard enough.
You know, Victoria, I always think, too, when I was in Cambodia a number of years ago visiting the S-21 prison where the intellectuals were chained to beds and tortured. And I interviewed, former Cambodian soldiers and just got a feel for the place as much as I could. And one thing that I heard was that Cambodia then, this is probably 10 years ago, was in an uncertain place. And one person described it to me as that after the war and the Khmer, who were the red communist Cambodians, after the war, and they'd done all these horrible things. They had killed their fellow countrymen by the thousands. Their heads were stacked. They buried them. They had mass murders, just like the Nazis. But there was never a Nuremberg trial. There was never justice. So life went on. You're living next door to someone who was with Khmer Rouge, and your family was killed. No peace, no justice. And they were the person telling me this is that there's just never been resolution. And we haven't had that. But we have a situation where there has been no justice for people who have done horrible things, and we have had real victims. I think, as I said, I think of Lieutenant General Flynn, I think of Manafort. He may not be innocent of everything. I'm sure he isn't. But surely he did not deserve the treatment he's gotten.
He didn't deserve the search pre-dawn search.
Right. Yeah, so we need justice for our general country's mental health. We need justice. And that's what I would say. If I had William Barr's ear, that's what I would say. We people need a line to be drawn. It's good for our mental health. It's good for the well-being of the country.
Well, equally important, Sandy, is that we have to know this cannot be accepted.
Exactly.
This cannot be tolerated.
Exactly.
We cannot have... And you know what? Republicans wouldn't do it. I'm not saying that we're, you know, prissy pure or whatever, but it just isn't in our DNA to do something like that. And the fact that they didn't blink an eye by weaponizing the intelligence, you know, the weapons that we use to catch spies and criminals, I just really, it depresses me a lot. Joe and I talk about it a lot. Like, this has got to get solved.
Exactly. It's got to be made right. There has to be some form of justice. And so we just pray that that'll happen under William Barr. Victoria Tensing, always a pleasure. I know you have to go do a talk. You look so pretty. You're all made
up.
So you got to go next door and look pretty and say something smart, okay?
Okay. All right, such fun seeing you, Sandy.
Thank you so much. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.